You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Tomorrow, August 10th, 2018, marks the 25th anniversary of the swearing-in of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She is 85 years old. She's still on the high court. Her image is on T-shirts and mugs and probably pens and pencils somewhere. There are books and endless articles about her. This year brought a new documentary, RBG, and now there's an album, The Notorious RBG in Song. Cap Radio's classical music host Kevin Doherty talked with me yesterday about this project, and I asked what his expectations of this record had been.
You think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and you think this pop culture icon, right? And you think this champion for gender equality and the Supreme Court justice, and you get a pretty maybe intimidating picture of this woman, but really it's a family affair. This is like a picture book.
This is not her in the gym doing her push-ups and some hard-driving rock and roll.
No, this is life and times and relationships. You see Ruth as a mother, as a daughter, an aspiring lawyer. It's a pretty special album.
So the music then for that kind of a picture of her would be intriguing, I think. Where is the music from?
The centerpiece on the album is from a woman called Patrice Michaels, and she is a composer, and she's also the singer on the album. But she's also Ruth Bader Ginsburg's daughter-in-law, married to her son, James. And James is the album's producer and the owner of the record label CD Records.
And you were able to talk to both of them?
Yes.
All right, so let's talk more about the music for just a moment and then hear some of the sound. Patrice Michaels wasn't the only composer involved.
No, she wasn't the only composer. In fact, she was one of three composers commissioned to write birthday pieces for Ruth Bader Ginsburg 5 years ago for her 80th birthday by James, her husband, and James's sister, Jane. Actually, one of the songs, this one's not by Patrice, it's called Pot Roast a la RBG, and it's about a pot roast recipe transcribed, and I'm using big air quotes here, by Ruth's daughter, Jane. And actually, James had a little bit to say about this.
This was one of the many culinary infractions that eventually got Mom kicked out of the kitchen entirely. And the recipe is full of instructions that have nothing to do with cooking, such as rewrite your child's English essay, and also has cautionary notes from mother's incidents in the kitchen, such as the roast ham with sliced thumb or the eyebrows being singed by waiting too long to light the oven after turning on the gas.
Brown a hunk of brisket in the ovular reddish-orange cast-iron pot received as a wedding present. No doubt from someone who little suspected the rueful purpose to which it would be put. Add carrot, celery, and red wine, and simmer this mess for a very long time. While this is simmering, drink some black coffee, read some advance sheets, and tell one of your children to do her homework for the third time. At the end of the protracted simmering, the contents of the pot will have spattered the sides with a bit of brown ash black residue. This dubious looking encrustation is the best.
Wow, it's not exactly a sing-along, but I sure get the picture of chaos in the kitchen.
There's definitely some chaos in the kitchen, and I think that perhaps Ruth was not the best cook. And
oh,
I think
that's part of her reputation, right? That she's just known as a terrible cook. I think her husband was the real cook in the family.
Yeah, Marty was the cook in the family,
for
sure.
Oh, that's a lot of fun. So this piece of 9 songs, The Long View, as it's called, tell me more about Patrice composing that music and this whole interaction with the family.
Sure. Well, Patrice Michaels also wrote a song for that 80th birthday. And she said at that point she could see this kind of glimmer of the song cycle that would become The Long View.
Oh, okay.
And once she began her work on the larger cycle, she actually told me that she knew that in order to sort of paint this portrait of Ginsburg's life, that she'd have to include so many of the people close to her that were such a big part of her life.
Well, I knew I would have to include as many of the close people as I possibly could. She's been supported marvelously and surprisingly by so many people, including her father-in-law, who gave her some great advice when she was pregnant with her first child and wondering if she would be able to handle law school. He said, "No, you can do this. Don't be afraid. Stop feeling sorry for yourself and get your attitude right and go for it."
Your attitude should be, "I will surmount this. Somehow I will surmount this. I will find a way to do what I want to do."
Great vehicle for Michael's voice, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But also some of the tension in the story, I think.
And that is exactly what the piece is about, this advice that her father-in-law gave her. And, you know, he says, you don't have to if you don't want to. You have a great excuse not to go on. But if you want to, you can, and you should have that mentality. It's a beautiful piece and a turning point in her career, I think.
Yeah, and that's a story she tells over and over.
Mm-hmm. But she had another turning point in her career, too, and it's when she worked on what was supposed to be a tax case with her husband, Marty.
One of my favorite pieces in the whole cycle is by her husband, Marty. He wrote an address that he was planning to give, but unfortunately passed away before he could, describing that first case that they had together. Which turned out to be the only case they argued together. His way of humorously describing this tax case that actually turned into a gender case is just brilliant. And she, of course, delivered that address in person at the conference that it was originally intended for after Marty passed away.
"When I practiced law in New York City and Ruth taught at Rutgers in Newark, we worked in the evenings at home. In my little room one night, I came upon a one-page brief written by Charles Moritz, a pro se litigant with a most persuasive argument. If I were a dutiful daughter instead of a dutiful son, I would have received the tax deduction. This makes no sense. Well, I went to the big room next door, handed the case to my spouse and said, 'Read this,' with a warm and friendly snarl. She said, 'I don't read tax cases.' I said, 'Read this one,' and went back to my little room."
We really do get family stories in song here, don't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So in that case, Patrice Michaels is singing the words that Ruth Bader Ginsburg's late husband, Marty, actually wrote.
That is exactly
right.
But
then RBG recited them after he had passed away at the conference.
Yes. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
With a warm, friendly snarl. Isn't that wonderful?
It's so good. And you could, and knowing who she is, you could see that too.
Yeah.
I really can. Yep.
I'm talking with Kevin Dougherty. We are in this week's Sound Advice hearing parts of the album, the notorious RBG in song, and parts of a conversation Kevin had with James Ginsburg, Ruth's son, and his wife, Patrice Michaels, who are behind the music.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the next piece I've chosen to listen to is actually written about James. But first, I was really wondering about James, and I had to ask him how, out of a family of lawyers, did he become a record producer?
I actually started collecting records when I was like 6 or 7. So I was always interested in recordings. I did campus radio at the University of Chicago. I did some work for Nonesuch Records. I reviewed recordings for American Record Guide and finally decided to try my hand at producing, in particular because when I came to Chicago in the 80s, I noticed all the wonderful musicians I was hearing when I went to the record store to look for their recordings, there were none to be found. The record labels tended to be based in New York or the West Coast, and they had no idea what was going on in Chicago. So I thought, somebody should be recording these people, and I took that on.
And so he walked away from his law school life to start CD Records.
Wow.
And right? And he told me that he did have to have a meeting with the family and present his case, to speak, right? Family of lawyers, but ultimately also a family of music lovers. And they relented and they encouraged him to follow his dream.
Was he like or not like the rest of the family?
Maybe he was destined from an early age to kind of go his own way. You know, he's the youngest son, and he was a bit of a prankster in school. In fact, it was Ruth who always got the phone call when he was in trouble. And Ruth, obviously, a very busy woman, you know,
right?
is and
sure.
was, always has been, right? So she reminded the headmaster that James had, in fact, two parents, and from that point on, that the headmaster should be alternating his phone calls between
wow.
herself and Marty,
wow.
and the headmaster agreed.
Hello. Yes, I see. I'm his father. Certainly, and you want me to come down to discuss his latest transgression? And his mother said to call? Ha ha! No, not at all. I assure you I'll be there directly. Thank you, Mr. Ginsburg. We're so very, very sorry. We're so sorry to disrupt your busy schedule. We don't know just how to say this. It is quite beyond the pale. Your son stole the elevator.
Your son stole the elevator.
How cool is that? I guess
these are great family stories.
Isn't it great? Yeah, the elevator operator was missing, and so James jumped in the elevator and took it up a floor, and I guess it got caught. You know, he didn't make it very far.
I think in gender equality, the calls from the headmaster should be shared between the mother and the father. That is really brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, we have time for one more. Do you have another?
Yeah, I have a warning. This one is a tearjerker.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So this was this piece is called My Dearest Ruth, and it was written by Stacey Garup, not by Patrice Michaels, not from the same song cycle. The words are from Marty, and it's the last letter he'd ever written to Ruth. After 56 years of marriage, Marty was dying from cancer, and Ruth found the letter while packing up Marty's belongings from the hospital so he could spend his last days at home.
My dearest Ruth.
It's a family photo album. It's a treasure of stories. It's poetry and beauty. Wow.
Yeah.
Not what I would have expected at all, but really remarkable.
It's really well done, and it lets you see behind the curtain, and it's a great album.
Especially if you saw the documentary. They're completely unconnected to each other, but as a companion piece to learn more about this rock star in our culture, in our world right now,
mm-hmm.
what a place to go to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
That was Cap Radio's classical music host, Kevin Dougherty. The album title is The Notorious RBG in Song. There's more at capradio.org/insight. That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruriak, and thanks for joining us.